from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. A freelance journalist whose home and office were raided by the San Francisco police is threatening legal action against the department if his belongings are not returned. And we now know judges who signed the warrants were aware of his job, according to a San Francisco supervisor. Police were investigating what they call an illegally leaked police report connected to the death of San Francisco public defender Jeff Adachi. As KQED's Sonia Hudson reports, journalists and First Amendment advocates are sounding the alarm bell.
San Francisco police officers raided Brian Carmody's apartment and office on Friday with search warrants signed by state judges.
It was unlawful and frankly pretty outrageous.
That's David Snyder, executive director of the First Amendment Coalition. He says the raid violates a state law that bars law enforcement from using search warrants to obtain confidential sources, even if the source gave the journalist information that was obtained illegally. Both police and the judges who signed the warrants were aware of Carmody's occupation. That's according to San Francisco Supervisor Sandra Lee Feuer, who says she spoke to the police chief Monday afternoon. Feuer says she believes the warrants were justified because, as a stringer, Carmody sells video footage and information.
I don't know if he met the threshold of a journalist because he doesn't really write the reports.
This isn't the first time something like this has happened in San Francisco. In 2006, freelancer Josh Wolf's credentials as a journalist were questioned when he refused a federal subpoena. Carmody was served with state warrants, which worries Wolf.
We have a lot more protections into the state context, which actually makes me even more concerned that it's a state warrant.
In a statement, the SFPD says the police report was illegally released and they are committed to maintaining the public's trust by investigating the leak. Adachi's successor, public defender Manohar Raju, says he's pleased police are investigating and that the report's release was wrong. For the California Report, I'm Sonia Hudson.
And in other legal news, a third California court has found a connection between the weed killer Roundup and cancer. In Alameda County, a jury has awarded more than $2 billion to an elderly couple who blames the agribusiness giant Monsanto for their disease. KQED science reporter Molly Peterson has the story.
Over more than 30 years, Alberta Pilliad and her husband battled weeds with a weapon they sprayed everywhere, Roundup, the world's best-known herbicide.
From their ads, we felt that it was incredibly safe to use.
Now the Pilliads are both battling lymphoma, and experts they've consulted say Roundup's active ingredient, glyphosate, may be to blame.
We wish that Monsanto had warned us ahead of time and that there was something on the front of their label that said danger may cause cancer.
Monsanto's parent company, Bayer, denies that the weed killer is dangerous, but jurors concluded that Roundup carries knowable risks to human health. They awarded the Pilliads $55 million in actual damages and another $2 billion in punitive damages. Bayer calls that verdict excessive and unjustifiable. Experts say it's likely to be reduced, but plaintiff's lawyer Brent Wisner says over 13,000 more lawsuits are looming.
The writing is on the wall. Three juries have spoken. This was a statement, and I hope Monsanto's listening.
As with previous cases, the company says it will appeal. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson.
San Francisco could be the first city in America to ban the use of facial recognition technology by police and other city agencies. The Board of Supervisors is scheduled to vote on the ordinance today, as Rachel Miro reports from KQED's Silicon Valley desk.
Government agencies across the country have been using facial recognition software for more than a decade, despite studies that show higher error rates identifying people of color.
Artificial intelligence is making surveillance and monitoring of populations much cheaper and easier.
Peter Eckersley directs the Partnership for AI, a research outfit bringing together tech firms and civil society groups. He says the technology is evolving, but the laws governing its use, not so much.
Using pre-existing rules, what we could end up with is actually a much more surveilled and controlled society than we had beforehand.
That's what most worries Brian Hofer. As head of the nonprofit Secure Justice, he's helped craft the ordinances under consideration in San Francisco and also Oakland.
We have no friendly cases of mass surveillance. It's always been abused, no matter what type of government, what era, what the technology was. And so this is our opportunity to keep the genie in the bottle.
San Francisco's police and sheriff's departments say they don't use the software yet. The ordinance, which would apply to all city departments, is much broader than just the facial recognition ban. But surveillance software other than facial recognition could be allowed after a publicly vetted policy is created for its use. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro.
Shifting gears, there's a runoff election today for the Los Angeles Unified District 5 School Board. Though 90% of District 5's students are Latino, both candidates in the race are white women. Jackie Goldberg and Heather Repenning rose to the top of the pool that included seven Latino hopefuls. The winner, whoever it is, will tip the demographics of the board to majority white. Four out of seven members will be Caucasian. The California Report's Lily Jamali spoke with Kyle Stokes, who covers education for KPCC, about the race.
Tell me about District 5.
LAUSD Board District 5 is this really weirdly shaped district that sort of has a northern half and a southern half. It kind of wraps around downtown Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And south and east of downtown Los Angeles, it's mostly Latino, working class to low income areas where the schools are almost entirely made up of non-white students. You know, 9 in 10 students in the south are Latino. Mm-hmm. On the northern half of the district, though, is a much more, you know, gentrified or gentrifying areas, sort of tonier neighborhoods like Los Feliz and Eagle Rock and Silver Lake. If you're familiar with LA, you know that those areas are much whiter than the city as a whole. And that northern half is where most of the turnout in these races tends to come from, even though this oddly shaped district was drawn this way mm-hmm. in order to give nominally a Latino candidate a better chance of winning in a majority Latino district.
I think a lot of people listening in the state are aware that Los Angeles Unified Teachers went on strike earlier this year, and there are questions about the financial ability to deliver on the promises made there. Charter schools have been a big part of that conversation and a big part of the conflict. How do they figure into the way that this seat, this race has played out?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that charter schools are part of the racial dynamics here as well. I think there are members of the community, including some Latino members of the Board District 5 community, who have looked at the candidate field and say that they don't really care as much about the race of the person who's running, rather in favor of they are much more concerned about whether that candidate supports or opposes charter schools. And right now in Los Angeles, there's definitely a popular swell of opinion in favor of the teachers union.
All right, Kyle, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was the California Report's Lily Jamali talking to KPCC education reporter Kyle Stokes. California is home to thousands of churches started by Asian American immigrants. For some younger members, these churches are too conservative. Progressive churches, typically with largely white congregations, are not always the right fit either. KPCC's Josie Huang met some Asian American Christians creating their own space.
At a Gothic-style church in Los Angeles, a couple hundred members of the group Progressive Asian American Christians are meeting up. They embrace LGBTQ rights and Black Lives Matter. They want more women ministers, and they had to leave the churches they grew up in to find Christians like them.
It was like a crisis of faith.
Sam Chung is a pastor from LA. He was raised in a Korean American church that opposes gay marriage and is dominated by male leaders, like many Asian American churches. Chung left that church after volunteering at a hospice where gay patients were dying of AIDS.
Seeing all these people that were abandoned by the Christian church, I realized something was wrong. You know, churches hid behind their walls but didn't really care for those who were sick and dying.
Chung ended up in mainline Protestant churches that matched his beliefs but were mostly white, and that had its own issues.
Yes, nice white church ladies telling me, oh, you speak great scripture, read scripture without an accent, that's great.
It's the type of story that Liz Lin hears a lot. She co-founded Progressive Asian American Christians, and she's thought a lot about why so many Asian American churches are conservative.
They're immigrant communities, and I feel like that brings with it the sense of keep your head down, don't take too many risks, keep quiet, and like they'll let us in, right? They won't kick us out or send us back.
She says many Asian American pastors model themselves after white evangelical leaders like
Rick Warren in Orange County.
There's like a little bit of a mindset of, oh, you know, like these are the people who brought us Christianity, so they must know what to do. So when you mix all those factors together, I think you often end up with churches that are even more conservative in some cases than white evangelical ones.
Lynn's group is a lively one with online debates on everything from male privilege to race, even the issue everyone seems to agree on, equal church rights for LGBTQ members, has exposed differences. Some members are okay with staying in Asian American churches that don't perform same-sex weddings as long as it looks like it's moving in that direction. But others say there's no reason to wait for change. Remember Sam Chung, the pastor?
But as a Christian community, let us be able to invite everyone to this table.
About half a year ago, he helped start the First Progressive Church. It's the only known Asian American church in LA that offers same-sex weddings.
We're not just the model minority, you know, supposed to keep quiet and just follow along. We can be active and step forward. So let's do it.
Churches similar to Chung's are being planned for Oakland and Seattle. This, he says, is the start of a new Asian American church tradition. For the California Report, I'm Josie Huang in Los Angeles.
My friends, is the California Report for Tuesday, May 14th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Energy Upgrade California, urging Californians to keep it golden through simple acts like unplugging unused devices. EnergyUpgradeCalifornia.org. Bridge Bank, a division of Western Alliance Bank, offering flexible financial solutions to entrepreneurs and to the technology and life science communities. Bridge Bank. Be bold. Venture wisely. And Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com.